but it, that's fine. You say you're ready? Okay, it's 7:05, and we're going to go ahead and open the meeting for the Boulder Planning Commission. Today is August 8th, 7 o'clock, and we have Matthew Cochran, Colleen Thompson, and Marion Johnson. We're going to go ahead and open the meeting with the Pledge of Allegiance. Marion, you can go. I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So we'll start with old business, which is to approve the July minutes. Does anyone have any comments on the July minutes? And do we have enough to vote on? Yeah, okay.
Can I make a motion to approve July minutes?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, then we move into new business, and we are starting now with initial public comments. And there's our podium. If you don't, it would be great if you would just come to the podium and state your name for the factual, for our information, so it can be on record, not only on the, sure, thank you, Curtis, not only on the recorder, but for PEG too. So does anyone have any initial comments for the initial public comments?
Just a clarification on, is it on any particular subject that these comments are for?
No. I think the thing is somebody was talking about the fact that we generally hold the comments at the back end of the meeting, and I think it was Elizabeth that said that they have, their school meetings always start with public comments. So I think we just thought we'd give it a shot and see how it goes. Yeah, so does anyone...
So if someone has a comment and doesn't want to sit through our whole meeting and wait till the end, they can
yeah.
give their comment and they can leave.
Yeah,
because that's what a lot of people want
to
do.
I didn't know if it was limited to a topic.
Uh-uh.
It's called the Netflix rule.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so we don't have any comments. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, the definition gets me, I guess. So, Mark Nelson, Boulder, Utah. I haven't been to Planning Commission meeting for a while, but I try to keep up on this a little bit. And, so, basically, item one is on what you've been doing on sign ordinance. It seems like you're going backwards on sign ordinance with this issue of the agricultural sign and exemption. Totally not necessary, not called for, you know, doesn't qualify as an exemption. You know, you can't, I don't see how you can come at it any other way. It's not part of the custom culture of the town to have these overhead signs. You know, there's never been one here that I can remember all the years I've been here. So it's really not a custom culture issue. And we've been through this before with Jim Smith on the corner, and he agreed to put his sign down lower. I think it works great, right? And then we don't have signs. We're not like, you know, making exceptions because, you know, exceptions are not a good idea. You know, most planners say exceptions are not a good idea because why? Because everybody wants one for one reason, you know. And particularly in this case, it's really not a couple for it. They can put their sign at 10 feet if they want to drop down. If they want to raise it up for a bigger truck, they can do that, or they can put a sign down lower. Let's keep our signs down low. And, you know, raising it from 10 feet to 15 feet, that'd be 50% increase. Not necessary. I'm a farmer and rancher. I don't think it's necessary. You know, so, looks to me, it's like the only reason that you do that is because somebody wants it. You know, that's not a good enough reason to do that. And I think it's backward steps. And, especially on the sign ordinance, it's going to be so hard to keep enforced. You know, I think we need to, I think the Planning Commission, the town, needs to stand as an example. Good idea, you know, not an exception. Okay, So that, item number two, I see there's been a lot of talk about spot zoning again and overlays. You know, there's not a, I've been involved in this planning now for years and years and years. I've never talked to the planner yet about exceptions, spot zoning, overlays were a good idea. Bad policy, you know, and I just think you guys should know this. I think a lot of these things, you know, things like spot zoning, overlays, exceptions, that's just overlay rhetoric. That's not planner rhetoric. Planner rhetoric should be more about conservation. And, you know, it seems to me you guys should know this.
Can I ask, so are you, so that's in reference to us discussing the revisions to zoning ordinance table of uses. Is that what you're talking about? Or are you just talking about in general when we talk about zoning?
I wasn't at the meeting, so I can't.
Yeah, okay.
I can't really.
Okay.
It's just about what actually went on.
We did talk a little bit about, yeah.
What I kind of read in the minutes, the way I interpreted the minutes.
Okay.
I'm off base there, you know, that's kind of the way I read it.
Okay. I was just wondering.
Is that not accurate?
No, I just wanted to clarify because you were saying that this was in reference to number two, or?
No, I think it was his
two things I was speaking.
That was your second point. Okay, yeah. I see what you're saying. That's your second point. Okay. Okay, I get it.
But
yeah, okay.
Telling Jason Downs was asked a question about overlays, you know, and I think it was Peggy to ask her. You know, she was a little general. The overlays are about, you know, protection zones, flood zones, those are overlays, and those are legitimate planner overlays. You know, when you start talking about overlays that essentially are kind of a pseudonym for spot zoning, you know, that's acceptable. So those are my comments for your ruminations.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Okay, so I take it we don't have any, so no more public comments. Okay, so then Curtis, you're going to give us a comment and report on building permits.
Okay.
Okay.
The reason I asked that this be on the agenda, and I'm preaching to the choir here pretty much, but I do get asked, since I've taken on this zoning administrator position, well, you don't need a building permit for this or that or whatever. And so I thought, well, I was talking to Steve about it. He said, let's start an information campaign and let's start getting, you know, the word out what really is required. And we're going to start at the bottom and then circle back to the bottom because the reason behind this is really important. It's building permits are required by state statute. And when Ludlow was enacted years ago by the Utah State Legislature, there were two primary things in mind. One was the subdivision ordinance, and the other was building permits. And these are basically, you know, protections. They're consumer protections. Subdivision ordinance protects people from buying lots that aren't usable or whatever. And enforcing the building permits is to protect the town from electrical fires, shoddy building, building sliding off the hills, which has happened. And, I mean, there's just a whole host of reasons not worth going into here. But state statute requires that we enforce not only our own ordinances, but this. And it required that we adopt the ordinances on building permits, which is basically Chapter 11. And it gives us the affirmative duty to enforce this, and our enforcement could be better, let's put it that way. And if we don't enforce it, if we neglect that duty, then we're negligent, and if something happens, if that electrical fire happens, or something happens that, you know, creates harm, and there's a lawsuit, and insurance companies involved and everything, they look at the town, and they, one of the first things they look at was a certificate of occupancy granted on this building, and if it wasn't, then they start looking at us. So there's a solvent out there. So anyway, chapter 11 of the is building codes and permit, taken straight out of state law. And Bruce Parker did this in 2008. He just dropped a lot of these provisions right out of statute. Basically, what's a permit required for? And the basic answer to that is any structure, any improvement, any remodel that's at all significant that exceeds $1,000 in value. And that $1,000 value is not in state statute, but it's allowed by state statute, some nominal figure in there. And so the town adopted an ordinance that said less than 1,000, they admitted it. So first said 1,000 people were donating their labor and said, well, I got my receipt for the materials. So they changed it, said 1,000 in value. So I'm not sure what you could build would be worth less than 1,000 these days, but that's what it says. The other exception is an agricultural building. And people say, well, I'm just building this or that, I'm just going to use it for ag. Well, number one, it's right in the ordinance that an ag building exception is not allowed in any residential zone. So it's limited to the GMU only. Then it has to have no plumbing, no electrical, and actually the town has a provision where they call it a project permit. It's free, but what it does is you come in and we run it through the process and we look at what it is you intend to do, and they say, yeah, you don't need a building permit for that. That's a true ag building or whatever, but now you're off the hook. And, you know, so you can't, they can't enforce the lack of a building permit against you because you went through the process by gaining the project permit, and under which it says no building permit required. But that's going to be kind of rare, you know, a barn, but, you know, there's other things in the statute about whether it has a foundation proper and all this stuff. But for sure, it cannot be occupied by anything but animals or hay or tractors. And it can't be a garage, it can't be an accessory building. It's strictly for ag purposes as defined by the state statute. The test is fairly narrow. And it's just really to, you know, protect ranchers that want to build themselves a barn strictly as well. And not put any electrical or plumbing in.
What about greenhouses?
That's correct. There's not any residential zone, there's no GMU zone. But if you're not, you put water in it, then it needs a permit.
Right. There's lots of people with greenhouses.
I know. And maybe what they're doing, maybe they're not plumbing it, maybe they're running a hose in and watering stuff. And so under the project permit, I think we could easily say, as long as it's not plumbed, you know, it doesn't have to be the international plumbing code or at all, and there's no power and you know, like a hoop house or something, I think, just get a project permit, then you're in the clear. So there's our exceptions. And the project permit we just talked about. Some of the reasons that it's important is if someone builds, and there are houses around town, dwellings that have been built without a permit, and if they want to sell that house, the FHA and the VA for sure, and now since 2008, a lot of banks have tightened things down, and they require, so I'm going to share it, go to the building department the other day on the phone, and she said a lot of them require a certificate of occupancy. If they don't show a building permit, even if they didn't get it at the time, we're not going to give them a certificate of occupancy. We did. They'd have to come in and get a building permit retroactively and bring the whole thing up to grade. So, you know, it's just kind of a risk not to do it. Like I said, I think it's required. Most people abide by the ordinances and they do it. We just kind of got to get the word out to the folks that are laboring under misunderstanding. And then once again, we circle back around to why does the town have to do this? And that's because of our exposure. You know, we're required by state statute and our own ordinance. So, anyway, this was just to kind of start to get the word out. And I think Steve said he wanted to write up something and start posting it around town, let people know that, you know, come on into Judy, look for the appropriate permit, and you will be
Thank you, Curtis. Go ahead.
The $1,000 thing has been on the books for years. And you used to be able to go with just a storage shed, you know, and you'd like get like 2 hours behind here for $1,000. Now you can't even come close to that.
$40,000?
Is there any reason not to change that value up? I mean, I realize you have to go get permits and it's out of the way.
Right. It's, and that's the thing, once you have a project permit, you say all it is a storage shed and it's prefab and it's going to be moved in, and then we call the inspector and say, can it just sit on the ground? And if he says, yeah, I'm a storage shed, nothing, I'm occupied by nothing but your tools and rakes, then we're all off the hook.
And it's still take a permit to do that.
If it's over $1,000 in value, as the ordinance stands right now, the answer is yes. Yeah.
So your point is, why not raise
why
it?
Not, because that's my point. Yeah. Why not raise it so we can put a detached shed up and not have a, I mean, what a safety on step is all, I guess.
Yep.
But it's a state statute, so that's not something we can change that.
No, yeah, there's not an amount in the state statute. That's a town ordinance. And it actually was like 2004, and then, you know, when Bruce Parker amended everything in 2008, that didn't make it into his amendment. So there's kind of a question on whether it was left behind. So it's actually a good idea that I revisit that if you want it up or take it out altogether just for a permit.
Is there a square footage maximum or minimum on that?
No. Not that I found.
It would be problematic with, like, hay storage. Those are, you know, that large.
I know there's been some question about electrical. I mean, I understand once you put plumbing in, then it's kind of like it's could be a home. But electrical is not even just a light, an overhead light.
I know, that's right. What I was thinking in a barn. That's just, yeah, it's interesting.
Battery off.
Slower? Well, there's a lot of exceptions that could be argued, but and that's why I keep getting hit with these questions exactly like that. And so what I've done is just reading the ordinance, reading the statute, and telling you what it says. So where are we going from there? I don't know. We want to get the information out so that people are aware of what the current, you know, what towns are required to do and what we're required to do. And then from there, we can talk about the exceptions or tailoring it within what's allowed by state. Now, electrical, because electrical fires do happen, they're probably going to say, no, it's got electrical, it's got to be inspected. And the international electrical codes, are, you know, they are what they are. And there's good reason for it, right?
Okay, so we're going to open up for a public hearing on action on the Sugarloaf Valley Farm conditional use application. So we're going to make a motion to close the meeting. We'll make a motion to close our regular meeting.
I'll make a motion to close the regular meeting and
open up. Yeah, we'll go to a public hearing.
I'll second.
Aye.
Okay, so that now we will have and, you know, if you guys want to just sit there, that's great. I'm totally okay with that. But just make sure that Peg can hear you, and, like, if you, I guess you know everybody here. I mean, you know.
For the public hearing, I do need them to stand up.
And that's, we're just asking you for, I mean, the rules that we're asking, that we've been asked to go by. So if you have a comment, if you don't mind, please come to the podium and state your name, since we are at a public hearing. Oh, is that it?
Okay.
So we'll go ahead and close the public hearing. I'll make a motion to close the public hearing and open the regular Planning Commission meeting back up.
You need a second.
I'll second it.
Aye.
So are we doing anything right on this right now, Curtis? Okay, so do you wanna continue the discussion on this then? I mean, I'm not really sure where we go from right here. To be honest.
Either discuss it further or you make a motion to
Okay.
Grant the conditional use permit or deny it.
Okay, so does anyone on the council right now have a?
I have one comment. We, I know we discussed it a lot last month. One question I had, Don, I wonder if you can answer, is there someone who is managing the, in other words, is there a contact for a person who's actually managing the people coming to stay? And who would that be? Sure, thank you.
What?
No, you don't have to.
Okay. Yes and no.
Okay.
There's several. Right now, Sean, the various parts of the farm are designated to different people. Sean's basically the guest rentals. Then he has an assistant caretaker in Denver, and I work with her.
Okay. And who does the public call if there are issues, just like we have
well,
for
they
the
have three people to call. They would call Evolve Vacation Rental, because they're basically the ones in charge renting and advertising.
Okay.
Evolve will contact us. We give Kelly's contact number.
Okay.
So when they're here physically, some people are saying for over a week, we ran out of toilet paper, so we ran some down there. You know,
right. Yeah.
They call Kelly. But they have a question about recently someone coming next month said, may I have my family come have lunch with us in our apartment? And we said, well, of course.
Right.
They emailed Kelly.
Okay.
So that's how that goes.
So
did you say Evolve?
Yeah.
Evolve?
Evolve Vacation Rentals. So
E-V-O-L-V-E,
E-V-O-L-V-E. Several people in town use them.
So my only question or concern around in the guest ranch, it's already defined, of course, in the ordinances and whatnot, but like an RSTR or a short-term rental, it seems like it would be nice to have a contact. So if there is a problem that with a neighbor, because it is in a residential neighborhood, someone can take care of the problem fairly immediately. I don't know if we have any power over that or not, but that's
the answer. We also made up a guest guidebook electronically, and we electronically send a guidebook, which contacts are in there, all the questions and all those. So they also have them when they walk in physically, there's a guidebook, and of course, we're welcome sign.
Okay.
So there really is for our guests. I don't know, like in the situation where you all had a cop concern, I was out of town, you didn't know to call Kelly.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But,
okay.
I know that's in your, just make a personal comment, I don't know why that's in the ordinance right now.
Yeah, no, probably isn't, yeah.
And that would be a condition that you could impose as part of the granting of the CUP, because it's a reasonable neighborhood traffic, et cetera, issue that's spelled out in the conditional use permit. So you can address things like that and say, okay, we'll grant it, but one of the conditions would be that there, you know, is a contact or two contacts that can be reached within, you know, to address problems or issues.
Okay. How does anyone else feel about that as a condition?
I personally feel like the ranch right now has, Andy is down there. I feel like there are people that actually live down there, and so if there was an emergency, I can see, I mean, I feel like there's people that are down there, even though they're not a part of necessarily Evolve, as far as you know, as far as what they do, but there is, I feel like there will always be somebody down there close.
Right, Andy's not responsible for the guests.
But all I'm saying is if there was an emergency, it's not like there's not somebody on the property, and this is just my own, I'm just making kind of a statement basically, like it's not like, I feel like there are people that live down there that if there was an emergency of some type that they're, it's not like there's nobody present, you know what I'm saying? And I'm just making a statement, but I mean, that's my only comment, basically. So if you wanted to have more, you know, someone to rely on, I can see that too.
Well, yeah, I think my request would be in a conditional use permit is that there's one or two direct contacts for the public to deal with any ranch issues that might come up when with guests are present. I just think it's reasonable in what we've done with other rentals around.
That's a perfectly reasonable condition. They already have it, so.
Well, could we just, as a condition of the CUP, have Item number 6 is in the RSTR ordinance applied to that CUP, which gives us the property.
Did you read that, Josie?
It's lengthy, but the heading is the person designated as the property manager in the CUP, the owner or third-party manager shall, and it talks about the keys, 24-hour contact information, response by telephone within 1 hour, in person, 3 hours. And then it has just the same concerns we had, like as far as there's map of the boundaries, animals are under control, there's garbage, there's fire extinguishers, there's if there's an outdoor fire pit, it's posted, clear of weeds and debris. I'm really summarizing here. Parking, yeah. Quiet time, right. And dark sky.
Yeah.
So it kind of covers all those things. And if that's within our authority to do.
So would we just insert that in there?
You know, the protection of the neighborhood quality and character, and, you know, quiet use, and they're really not an imposition on a well-run organization.
We are not that ordinance.
Right, but what I'm saying, but it's as a condition of the CUP, which it sounds like it's within our authority to do because it is in a residential neighborhood, that we can adopt item 6 of that RSTR ordinance into that CUP.
Yeah.
And the concern, at least for me, is I have no problems. I think it's great with the guest ranch there, but if you have anywhere from 20 to 30 beds on an available night and not many people coming in,
there's not that many.
We talked about, yeah. So, but there are 3 different places. So it's just, there's just a lot more, it's more complicated to me than a simple, single RSTR going on in the neighborhood. So to me, those are conditions that are important for the quality of the neighborhood. So I'd like to introduce that. I'd like to have that as part of the topic.
So which section of the ordinance is that?
So this is section 1-6 and all inclusive.
Under the property management section. Okay, so. And those are things that they already take care of, I'm sure.
Sure.
It's a very responsible group.
Well, and as we move forward with possibly more guest ranches, then, you know, it does set precedent.
So does anybody want to make a motion?
Yeah, I was going to say, so anybody else have more thoughts? So then we'll make a motion to accept the Sugarloaf Valley Farm conditional use application with the condition that we add the what's it called?
Section 1, number 6 of the RSTR ordinance.
Yeah, and then we'll send that on to the town council.
Yeah.
With now that
the planning commission approves COPs and it's done.
And so then we're done.
Yep.
Okay.
So I second that motion.
Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Can you do a whistle for that one?
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
Josie Muse, aye.
Matt Cochran, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Marian Johnson, aye.
Okay, so then we'll move on to discuss the ranch sign amendment to the zoning ordinance. So when we talked about this before, we talked about lowering the height. Is that correct for this particular sign? Isn't that what we were talking about?
Their application.
Basically, I just threw the question out because it is a ranching area, and I guess there's not, I don't see them around Boulder, but you see them all over southern Utah, Colorado, in ranching areas, you know, they're very, very common. And so their theory, when they first put it up and they realized they had violated the ordinance, they went out and took it down, and then they applied for the fish use permit, and they offered to put it off to the side. And so I kind of bounced it off the planning commission and said, you know, it seems just for the exception over the ranch entry road, like you see all over the west, that would be a fair thing so that hay trucks, cattle trucks, et cetera, can get under it. And you all thought at that meeting that sounded reasonable. So a couple of people objected, said, and basically objected when we denied it before, My feeling on that argument is, I put it in the same place that the other argument is, well, we've always done it this way in the planning commission, I mean, and we have ordinances, that's the way they should have done it, and if we haven't been following them, we need to. And the argument that, well, before we didn't allow that, well, did we really, should we have allowed it, you know, over a ranch entry? Not in any other circumstance, and that's the question. And Frank, I don't think there's a lot at stake here. They're totally willing to stick it off the side if you want. And then they would have to, is the top bar, well, that's under 30 feet, so they can still put that up there. They can't hang a nice little rusted sign on it, which I don't think it's a good reason to not use common sense or to amend the ordinance where you think it's justified. That's the process we're going through here. And if you don't think it's justified or whatever, then don't do it. If you think that it's a good thing to do, then, you know.
So I drove by the highway the other day, and I was looking for Gibbs' sign, because I wanted to see where it was and how compared to the height of the other one that I had on the other side of the road that I had just driven by, LeBaron's. And I couldn't hardly see Gibbs' sign because it's covered in willows. So because of where it is right now, you can't even see his sign. Or if that sign was up above the road, you would know that you were going into his property, where now you're just kind of, you know. So that's my only comment. I mean, I do see the reasoning in my own mind of why you would want to have it at your entrance and having it high, because I can't see Gibbs' sign anymore. And so that's my only comment.
The other thing to point out is the way I drafted this, because of the feedback that I got,
yeah,
was it would only apply to legitimate ranching operations. And so I don't think Gibbs' property, that 10 acres there, would have even qualified for this ordinance. So yeah. I think you have to be in a legitimate ranching operation to demonstrate a need where you're actually haying, hauling cattle, and doing things that, you know, ranchers with big vehicles do. And if you want to put an entryway sign up, then, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I personally prefer signs off to the side. I mean, just having lived in Montana, it's like, every ranch you go by, it's like this big sort of gateway, and it brings a different sort of feel. And if Boulder's, if that's not the history of Boulder.
Yeah.
Let's just leave it as is.
Okay.
That's my.
Do you have a comment on it?
I like the way that it's being proposed, that it's restricted to farming or ranching enterprises, 15 feet. I think with that limitation, we're not going to see a lot of them.
Yeah.
And aesthetically, I like the 15-foot sign, so I'm for it.
Mary Ann can actually participate with you.
Okay, that's what I was wondering. Do you have a comment on this?
No, she can't.
What? What?
Not that she has to, but she can't.
No, that's what I'm saying. If you don't have, I mean, do you have a comment?
Well, my comment, I'm thinking, I guess it depends on how you feel about Boulder, whether you want to keep it or change it. I think about up in our subdivision, and I can think of one sign that somebody has to their property there that's up, like, the 50 or higher.
In your subdivision?
In our subdivision, mm-hmm. Yeah, to get into their property.
So it's not a ranching, it's just mm-hmm.
But if it's the 10-foot limit, then it complies.
Yeah,
if it's above it, then it's not taller.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it.
Yeah, go ahead, Mark.
So now, the people that own that ranch are not ranchers, they're developers. So they have the ranch on to the main ranch right now. They start selling lots down there. Did that take time now? Even if they're like farming part of it, or, you know, I mean, they're gonna market it as what's it called, Boulder Creek Ranch, or Boulder Creek Ranch Estate. That's where they market it. We know that's coming. And this is what I'm trying to say about being a planning commission. You have to think not just about right now. You have to look down the road. What's coming, and what you want to have to deal with when it comes. That's why, you know, you have to look ahead. How do this goes? You know what's coming.
Okay, so we're going to really vote on this? As far as whether we're going to accept a change or what do you... What?
May I ask another question? Mm-hmm. Did they ask you to make it 15 or is
no.
that Curtis? Is
it? No, what happened was I actually got the call, and so did Curtis, that they had put their sign up, and then they realized, I think, I don't know whether someone mentioned something to them, or that they realized that they were not in compliance. They didn't realize. So then, and they were willing to take it down. Right. It's already taken down, and so it was his, he came to us. He came to us first.
And it occurred to me during
exactly
what Perry's discussion actually.
Yeah, and so we've just kicked it around basically as far as why would it, why, I mean, if it was, you know, we just started discussing it basically. So that's how it came up.
Will the other two signs be able to lift up, or are they forever under the old? And is this an ordinance change?
No,
it's just an amendment, isn't it?
Qualifying, they were, anybody can lift the sign up if this passes, and they can go and lift it up if they're a legitimate ranch.
Yeah. Okay. Clarification: this is only discussion now tonight. Anyway, it's not a public hearing, and you're not taking a vote on an action.
Oh, good. Thank you.
You're not taking a vote?
No, yeah.
That's right.
There's
a discussion.
Yeah. We could decide if we're going to drop it now.
Yeah.
Or carry it forward. Yeah. So you let me know if I need to schedule a public hearing for next week.
Okay, so yeah, so do we want to continue this or do we want to drop it? Who?
Well, I'm not interested in it.
I'm not either.
And I'm neutral. I think we have a lot bigger things to do.
I do too. Yeah, I do too, as far as that goes.
Scratch.
Okay, so let's just drop it for now.
And if somebody wants to carry it forward, then they can come propose it to us and we'll put it out again.
Yeah. Okay. Is that okay?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay, so then we'll just go ahead.
Just a general idea. Yeah. And everybody said, well, what about?
Yeah.
Well, it looked pretty good the way it was.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it was just something that we were trying to discuss on. Okay.
Okay, so
all right. Do we make a motion?
Motion to approve the conditional use permit for the sign. Because it was in there both ways. Actually,
yes.
I already approved it last time.
Yes, we did.
We approved it on lower, off to the side.
Yeah.
Okay, and so it's been approved.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we just wanted to talk about it a little bit more so then. Okay. So now we're going to discuss the revisions to the zoning ordinance table of uses. And this is also just a discussion, right? Yeah, this is just a discussion. So Perry, at the end of our meeting last month, basically threw out some samples, or not samples, but some of the things that he wanted to go through in the table of uses. And I know resort was one. What was the other ones?
Guest ranch, resort.
Guest ranch.
Professional offices, light industry, and home occupation. Industry.
Okay, so you
wanted to prioritize guest ranch, B&B, and resort.
Oh, have we spent enough time at B&B?
Now there was, yeah. So let's just go. So let's start with guest ranch. Would that be all right?
Mm-hmm.
Since that was so did any of you read what we had talked about before? Go back and it was in what was it? January 2018. That's when we picked it up before.
Yeah, I didn't find too much in that.
Yeah, there wasn't really.
But along with guest ranch, I did do a little research and,
I was gonna say,
you know, and so I have some, these aren't legal definitions. These are real basic, just off Wikipedia type definitions. But I wanted to get an idea, well, what is a guest ranch? What do people think they are? And so a guest ranch typically, according to most people, is known as a dude ranch. It's a ranch that is oriented towards visitors and tourism, and it's considered a form of agritourism. So just on that level alone, when I think of a guest ranch as defined in the ordinance, and I don't know, what is it right now? It's just really, it's the vaguest thing I've ever seen. But in order to define a guest ranch, I would, one, say it has to be a working ranch, and this becomes a side income that helps amend the working ranch. And two, that it has to be a minimum acreage in order to function, which I'm not sure what that is. Might it be 100 acres, but it can't be like a 5 or a 10 acre, just a GMU, any GMU piece. Because that would mean that I could be a working ranch if I wanted to. And so I think we need to limit, I personally think we need to limit it by two of the confines would be acreage and that it's an actual working ranch.
Would green belt, I mean 6 acres, that's a working
ranch. I think
that I don't like that. I don't think that's the idea. Is then I mean, I'm a you know, I have one residence on my property and I have 10 acres and I could work, then I could become a guest ranch and build 5 cabins and just rent them out to guests and then get one cow and ride her a horse around and stuff.
I think that's where the RSCRs come in and we need a clear, I mean, that's so rare right now, we need a real clear line on what is an RSCR, what's a guest ranch, what's a resort.
Right. And so guests, RSTRs and ADUs, seems like we can do on residential properties. But to me, a guest ranch has to be a much larger domain.
I agree.
Those are my initial
thoughts. I agree with it too, because I like the way that this definition is, because it also says, depending on climate, some guest ranches are open only in the summer or winter. Some of them do go year-round. But it also talks a lot about what that offers you as far as when you go there. You know, like there's hay rides, campfire sing-alongs, hiking, camping, whitewater rafting, zip lining, archery, and fishing. So it's hard to imagine that on 6 acres. You know, all those things that you would go to. And I think about the ones up in Montana and that we see, I mean, in California even, and, you know, so I, and the last sentence is, a number of working ranches have survived lean financial times by taking in paying guests for part of the year. So, yeah. So are we going to try to craft this right now, or?
I think maybe that's homework. I can try and craft some more on it. But my question is, when you think of a guest ranch, are there any other conditions that would make a guest ranch?
So they have to have all of these things to be a guest ranch?
No, right now I'm... You know,
yeah.
No, I'm, right now I'm only saying working ranch and a minimum acreage, and I don't know what that amount is yet. I don't know what's appropriate. I haven't really researched it or thought about it.
See, I think they're two good definitions, or two definitions to start with. That it's a working ranch, because I think that was the hard time, that the thing about the other guest ranch that we have let become a guest ranch is that it doesn't really come under anything that we have as a guest ranch, you know? I mean, it is 6 acres, and it's going to be more of a, I'm not really sure what you would call it, but the one that we have. What?
And it's lodging.
It's lodging, yeah. It will be strictly lodging. So, I think they're two good definitions to start with.
Yeah, so what I don't want to see is that someone use the definition of a guest ranch to use a loophole just to make a lodging facility in the public.
Yeah.
I think that's wrong.
And I agree with what you're saying. Well,
because
my question is it starts out as a working ranch, they bring in the guest ranch to subsidize it basically, and then it turns into a guest ranch and no longer a working ranch.
Then it's a resort, and my thing is we take resort out of the use of definitions.
Well,
and to me that should be made clear in your definition if that's what you desire.
Right.
Well, and that's what you have your conditional use permit, and if you're no longer within the bounds of that permit, then it no longer applies.
As long as
you're
still
in
the
sport.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's
the
start.
And, you know, an annual review of the permit would be a reasonable thing.
we're supposed to be.
Yeah, yeah. So do you want to start with that, or do you want to?
I'm good with that. You want to try to move on to resort?
Yeah, because we at least got to start on that. I feel good about that. Instead of the two sentences, that it's only one sentence, actually, on the old guest ranch.
Definition for resort is a self-contained commercial establishment that tries to provide most of the vacationer's wants, such as food, drink, lodging, sports, entertainment, and shopping on the premises. I don't see a resort fitting personally into Boulder's character. So my proclivity would be to scratch it off the list and not even have it in the use of definition.
I kind of see the lodge as a resort. I mean, it offers lodging, it has food, it has, depending on the groups that come in. If we look at our current definitions, which is a facility that serves as a destination point for visitors, generally has recreational facilities, perhaps that doesn't fit, for the use of guests, and may include residential accommodations for guests. Guest residency is limited to no more than 90 days. That's interesting.
I'd be more interested in taking the word lodge out, I mean the word resort out, and adding lodge. Because lodge, to me, there again, you're looking at a hunting lodge or a... And I'm not saying that we should put it in, but I like the word lodge better than I do resort. I don't know how anybody feels about that, but I'm not happy with the resort definition either.
What is it currently allowed in? It's only in GMU, right? It's not. And see, I would consider it something that should be only in commercial, but that puts it more into a lodge motel.
Yeah.
Do you think what do you see as the difference between a lodge and a resort?
Well, this 90-day limitation and recreational facilities, which would, I guess the resort would be like a golf course.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I don't see for Boulder.
Sort of the GMU.
Seeing anybody stay at either one of them for 90 days.
Yeah, and like Matt just said, I think it's important that the GMU part doesn't make sense. That's where you come into a guest ranch and not a resort.
Yeah.
And I agree. Maybe we should just strike it. Why do we have it in there?
Tiffany, in there?
I agree.
That's probably better because if you're taking away, somebody's going to build one.
Or at least remove it from the GMU.
And put it in commercial?
I don't even want to do that, but yeah.
I think if you're not going to allow it, you need to say that something. Not just leave it open.
Is there any history of a resort trying to come into Boulder?
There actually is.
Is there?
Well, it's a real park that about 60 years ago had a resort planned for my ranch.
Really?
And actually, they just gave me a copy of a newspaper article on that. I had a read it with you guys. Very hilarious. Yeah, he made a cream of the burns on that ranch up there to put in a resort. Architect's rendition, when Raymond showed me that he thought I got it somewhere. He just said, show them right back.
And so what did that,
50 years
later. And what did that incorporate as far as the resort? I mean, you said, he had it all kind of planned out, like horseback riding, a restaurant,
well,
shopping,
yeah.
And...
he doesn't know Dale Clarkston, he can kind of imagine.
Yeah.
Who was that?
Dale Clarkston.
Oh, and your property? You don't remember him?
Well, yeah,
that's
what he did.
Yeah.
That's what the developer was.
You
said
he
couldn't
find out on your
property?
Yeah.
So we're back to...
Before you own this.
So, yeah, we're back to... Peg can't... She's trying to keep these comments, so... Just try to remember that.
Well, this is what I taught.
So,
yeah, exactly. Okay.
So I suggest we just talk about these then.
Yeah, we're not going to do anything tonight.
We don't have to decide whether to strike it or not, but let's think about it and then in September come back with some actual decisions on what we're going to do.
And there's a final comments period at the end of the meeting, too, so.
Yeah, that's true.
Right.
That's true, sorry. Okay, so.
So a couple of thought cuts. You don't need to put language in the resort's not allowed. That's not the way to do it. You don't state it negative.
Right.
If it's out, it's out.
Right.
And so you state what is allowed.
Right.
And the other point is, I've heard ever since I've come to Boulder, the condos and golf courses and all of this stuff. And, you know, maybe 50 years from now that's a concern. But I mean, golf courses take golfers. Okay. And you know, golf courses are very expensive. They take a lot of golfers. And it's just that's not going to happen. You know, like I said, I won't say it's going to happen 50 years from now. But
right.
That's a pie in the sky thing. That's a pure story.
Well, you connect the dots between Moab and St. George, and we'll be a golf
if we become Moab.
Well, there's a golf course down in outside of Zion at Carmel Junction down there, and I always wonder how they survive down there.
It's just off the motel, and plants involved.
Yeah.
And it's, anyway,
that's all. Yeah. So I'm not interested.
So we could eliminate resort if we wanted to.
Or limit it, like you say, if we take it out, then it's unstated.
Yeah.
Exactly.
If we limit it to commercial, that's good because we limit it.
Yeah. Because there is no commercial.
It would have to be a spot zone, which would have to go through a full process.
Yeah.
Okay.
Should we move on?
Yeah. What's the next one that you had?
Professional offices. But the definition is not very interesting. But I think we've thought of professional offices in the realm of being able to provide something for medical or veterinary type clinics. I don't know what other uses professional offices would be needed in Boulder. We don't need lawyers.
Damn George.
professional offices like high tech companies, I don't know.
Once we become Moab, we will.
Right.
Well, alternative medicine. I mean, it's not necessarily medical and dental clinics, but I can see that here.
Are they listed now as in commercial zones? Is that what we?
Right now, I think that fits under home occupation.
The professional offices, do we actually have it in here?
Yeah, we do.
It's in commercial.
And it's in commercial, but I think because that vision was, you know, an office that's going to have a lot of traffic and you need a parking lot and,
right.
You know, that type of commercial office building.
Yeah, you have to bear in mind, these were drafted by a planner out of Salt Lake who was using a template, who used that template for all kinds of different towns and stuff. So there's a lot of stuff in here that is not a fit. It's just...
Right. And I'd simply say professional offices would be something that are located along Highway 12 in the commercial zone as needed.
And that's what it is.
Can't really.
It is.
Well, anyway, we'll get into all that when you start trying to refine this, because drafting ordinances and statutory interpretation is a whole different ball of wax.
Right.
And so it has to be enforceable. So, and until you get into the details, I can't say, well, you can't do this or you can do this.
Right.
It's like that RSTR ordinance, the reason it flows the way it does, and the reason we took all that time to develop it was so that we could make it enforceable, so it made sense, well organized, people can understand it, but, you know, mostly so that you can look at it and enforce it after.
Right. And in context with these definitions, we're just trying to make sure that there are no loopholes someone can shimmy through and make something that we...
Yeah, well, this is a good place to start. Just start saying, well, what really applies to Boulder and what doesn't, and where are the vulnerabilities, what is the likelihood that this is going to happen and that's going to happen, and where do we need to evolve from and to.
So we've talked a little bit about light industry or light manufacturing. And I don't see how it's going to work. Unless it's in a commercial zone along the highway somewhere, but as soon as you bring these things into residential neighborhoods, I don't understand how that can happen.
Well, I didn't understand how we could have Airbnbs in our neighborhoods too, a lot of people, but it is, and it's a commercial enterprise.
Right. Do we have lots of people applying for light manufacturing in town?
What is that?
It says a section of the economy's secondary industry characterized, sorry about the definition, by less capital intensive and more labor intensive operations. Products made by economies light industry tend to be targeted toward end consumers rather than other businesses as intermediaries. Consumer electronics and clothing manufacturing are examples of light industry.
Yeah,
but our definition.
Yeah, our definition works.
Yeah.
Is more fitting.
Yeah.
It's the assembly, fabrication, or processing of goods and materials using processes that ordinarily do not create noise, smoke, fumes, odors, glare, or health or safety hazards outside the building or lot, where such assembly, fabrication, or processing takes place, where such processes are housed entirely within a building, or the area occupied by outdoor storage of goods and materials used in such processes does not exceed 25% of the floor area of all buildings on the property. Light manufacturing generally includes processing and fabrication of finished products, predominantly from previously prepared materials, and includes processes that do not require extensive floor areas or land areas. I think that fits. I think what it doesn't cover is the workshop automotive that folks want to do in GMUs.
Okay, right. And what zones are those allowed in?
So light manufacturing is only in commercial.
Okay, I'm good with that.
Well,
so
what about Debbie's? Makes hats and t-shirts.
Yeah.
That comes back to home occupation minor, right?
Yeah.
Not necessarily. I mean, she's got all the sewing machines in there, all this inventory.
Just one.
And she sells them.
Yes. Home-based business, no employees.
But does it result in noise, vibration, light, odor, dust, smoke, or other air pollution noticeable at or beyond the property line? No outside storage of good materials, equipment, has no signage? I think our home occupation is broad.
Yeah.
Enough.
I think she would be. So what I would like to bring up is Autumn Peterson.
But my concern with that is we're talking about hazardous materials.
Right.
Yeah,
and outdoor storage.
That's not a fit.
Yeah.
And so that's where that would be a light manufacturing and not a home occupation.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So exactly, that's kind of what I'm saying. There's your difference right there,
mm-hmm.
is she's light occupation. But I also have a comment too. Like I know for a fact that she would like to bring her business into town. You know, so we don't have any other commercial places. I mean, all the commercial is already used at this point. So if she wanted to bring her business into town, what could we do for her? I'm just bringing this up, you know, because she would, I mean, her family's been here for, you know, a long time. And I also, did you talk to her at all? Have you talked to Autumn at all?
Not recently.
Yeah.
I kind of know that she wants her business
yeah.
here.
Yeah, I,
but I also know that she doesn't necessarily want it anymore.
That's right. And that's the comment that I was going to make, too. She would like to bring her business into town, but she doesn't want it in Lower Boulder. I mean, she knows that that's not the place where she would like to have it.
It would come down to looking at a piece of land that
yeah.
she would propose to spot zone.
Okay. And is that how, I mean, if we would do that, we would look at that as a spot zone, as far as that would go, so.
It's just a change zone.
You could look at a change
or
a
rezoning.
Zone.
Or rezoning. Uh-huh.
Or rezoning to commercial.
Yeah.
Or it could go either way.
I think that Colleen made a good point, is that there is no commercial zoning left in town.
Yeah.
And I think you have to require some for growth.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's state rule or regulation, but it might be some minimum that you have to provide or should provide.
Yeah.
And currently it's not in zoning.
But how's that possible? If there's no land available, how do we provide commercial zoning?
We change some zoning.
Whose property?
Change the zoning. Yes.
Of whose property?
Yeah.
Don't hold me to this, but I think Ray is onto something there, that And as the state statute requires the general plan to be revisited every 5 years, I can't swear to this, but I have a vague recollection, we'll have to check it out, that it also requires that you look at your zoning occasionally, and you can't just, you're really not supposed to just freeze everything and freeze everybody out and freeze property owners into one spot. We've never had a comprehensive zoning plan meeting in the town of Boulder. The zoning map was created when Ray Thompson, head of the planning commission at the time, whatever, years ago, sat down with Judy and a couple of planning commission members, and they took the map and they said, okay, here's Hilton Hall, that's commercial, here's the this, and they just started coloring stuff in. And that was just after the lodge was built, and while it was being built, and there was a big hubbub about that. And so, and you know, this precedes 1998 when our zoning ordinances were passed. And so it came about, as it does often, as it did in Springdale originally, as it does often in small towns, just like, well, let's go through and what is what is, and then that's it. And like I said, I'd have to check it out. But I do think the town has an obligation to, you know, what Ray was saying, and that is revisit that one way or another. I don't think you can, maybe you can, but I don't know. I mean, just freeze it right there and never having had a, you know, like most towns have a zoning commission. They look at industrial zones, like manufacturing zones, office park zones, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the reason for that is that they have to plan for the future and all that. Now, the sense is right here in Boulder that we would kind of like to freeze the place and not have too much more. So what we have said is, if somebody can present a good case on a piece of property where it would be appropriate, then you can consider rezoning that piece of property. And so that's kind of where we're at.
Okay.
And that is spot zoning, you know, basically. It's, spot zoning is not a good word for it, but it's rezoning. Rezoning upon request. Our ordinances are replete with processes that allow anybody to apply for a rezone. And then it goes to the town process to see if they want to do that. It has to be approved first by you guys and then by the town council. Or you could deny it, the town council could grant it. But the town council has the final say on a rezone. So that's kind of a good question for us to address while we're going through these definitions and looking at the, well, what is the future, what, you know, what does everybody want? Just went through that with the general plan.
Can we go, or should we wait?
It's up to you, but as long as it's orderly, so I can capture the comments.
Okay, so Steve, go ahead.
One of the examples I would think about is what could happen to the old county shed that Rachel uses?
Yeah.
What could she ever do with that if she decided it would be residential? I mean, it's set up to be something other than a residential or home or so on. So I think we also have to look at what we have and what it could be or should be. But that's just an example.
Or has been.
Yeah. Right.
I think another good example was when Locke was living over on the property near me across the hills and hollows, and he had his business going. He actually applied for a zoning change, and the town gave him a conditional use permit at the time for his business, or as it probably should have been a zoning change.
Right.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mark.
My house, this is something that we, you know, it's hard to make a decision on. But, you know, it's probably the most straightforward thing you can have to look at. You know, I don't think that we don't become obligated to start creating enterprise zones or commercial zones or whatever. I don't think we're obligated. I think we're obligated to have a kind of town we're going to have. I think that the flood was, you know, pretty much said, the state said that that's okay.
Yeah.
Well, you want to be a certain way to be that way. So we're not we're obligated to all of a sudden start having all these commercial spaces. But, you know, you can think, whether they're trying or recreate corporate commercial. Let's love that property, let's try to underutilize it, it's away from the Santa Park town, so you can lose some of the...
Which property, I'm sure I couldn't...
The property on the side of the creek, the Boulder Creek. Race property.
Good commercial spot.
The county shed, the other county shed, yeah.
I mean, you know, you're right, Mark, basically, I can't do anything with my property. I can't farm it because I don't have sufficient water to farm it. And it's just sitting there as weeds. And some of you look like, some of you like to look at that, some of you don't like to look at it. It's a fire hazard.
And that's not saying all this is a commercial.
No, I don't understand, Mark, but I understand, but I can't. I'm not trying to make it a commercial zone.
Okay, that's right, you guys can't.
But just to hit on Mark's thing, remember back to our general plan and the vision of Boulder, and there's not a whole lot of emphasis on growth.
For me, it's supply and demand, and we have the means for that now. If we have a demand for more commercial, we have the means for somebody to apply to someone that way.
Okay, I kind of feel the same way on that. So what was the other definition?
I think home occupation or cottage industry, which seems to be well mapped out already.
Yeah.
According to our definitions. I was more concerned with the first view.
Okay.
Personally, I don't know what others there are.
He had mentioned, and Harriet said bed and breakfast is one of the priority things that he put down as...
But I also feel like we talked about bed and breakfast.
Yeah, I'm just saying what you put down.
Yeah,
I'm not sure why it did that. Yeah.
Right, and that's what my comment was going to be, basically, was bed and breakfast, because we talked about bed and breakfast, and I think I still have a thing where they have an association where they have to, like, Ellie has to meet those requirements through the state of bed and breakfast. I'm not exactly sure what it is, but she follows that. So I don't have a problem with bed and breakfast, as far as that goes.
As far as your definition of table uses?
Yeah. I think that we should leave it in there. I think it's a good option. I like the option of a bed and breakfast. That's my own personal opinion.
No, I mean, you're dealing with definitions right now, so
mm-hmm, yeah.
If you're fine, great. Yeah. For some reason, you wanted that prioritized, and I don't even know why.
So my suggestion is we work on the definitions, each of us, that we've talked about, and then we come to an agreement on maybe or closer to if we need to change some of them next time around.
Mm-hmm.
That would be especially on guest ranch, on what we want to do with the resort, on light industry, and, well, professional.
I'd really like to throw campground in. Have you guys read campground? It's pretty scary. An area of land upon which two or more campsites are located, established, or maintained for occupancy by a tent or recreational vehicle as a temporary dwelling unit for recreational and vacation purposes. And I think that, I thought it was campground. So, yeah, so I'd like to kind of look at those because it's under GMU and LDR. Which means it could almost be anywhere in town.
Actually,
right?
That campground definition, it's fine with itself because that's been rolled in to section 10.16 or 17, RV parks and campgrounds, which is like...
So could we take that out? Is this another one that we could get rid of because it has been rolled into the RV? That's what I was wondering.
This is a lot of work.
I know.
I'm going to end up doing all the drafting here. Yeah. So what I want to do is continue this discussion, make it global enough. And this is great because now you're starting to say, well, okay, what about a campground? And I haven't really thought of that, but that should be cleaned up too. What about a bed and breakfast inn? How does that interface with the overall plan? And like you said, down in the neighborhoods. Okay, well, then that solves the small part of a small business thing. You can do it. So that, it's a meals may be provided. A lot of towns say shall be, at least one meal shall be provided.
Yeah.
You know, there's different templates we can look at. And then what are the, if you're going to do this, what are the conditions under which you grant them? And they should be in there too, or deny them. Remember the Moab case we talked about?
Yeah.
You have to have your findings of fact. You have to have your traffic. So you can't just say, oh, that'll create a lot of traffic on the road, or I don't like it. You can't do that. You've got to, you know, actually commission a traffic study in order to deny something, or in some cases to grant something, so that you have a solid foundation and meet the legal tests under the definition. So I think it's a great place to start, is to just start kind of going through here, and everything that falls into maybe the tourist market, anything that's further defined later on, you just kind of look at it all, and then home occupation and light manufacturing, and steam wanted to start, you know, to help, you know, people have an income here and be able to raise a family here. So this is a great discussion, and we should just kind of go through all of them.
Our next meeting is in September, and we're already looking to coming on to fall and winter. And I would really like to have some work meetings, you know, in the fall, so that we're not, I mean, I feel like there's so much information that just coming here and talking, we don't really get very far. So, I mean, I don't know if anybody's interested in doing that this winter as far as starting some of this and then really digging into it.
Let me tell you what my situation is, because it may not seem like it, but basically for every hour you think about this, I'm going to be thinking about it for a whole bunch of hours.
Yeah.
And so, that's just the way it is. I'm going to be gone for 30 days until September 20th, so I'll miss the next meeting, and obviously I'm not going to be able to do anything, but I have been able to clear a couple of projects off my plate here, so I'm getting more free time. So I think this winter I'm going to be able to dive into this. So what I would encourage you to do in September is keep doing exactly what you're doing here and rolling through these things and reading every single definition in here. Look at everything in the table. You say, well, what really does need a look? Let's just look at it all and get a comprehensive thing. And then if you want to have work meetings or a group or committee or whatever, then we can get together and start hashing things out there and diving deep. Like, I don't think we've even begun to talk about what truly light manufacturing could be, and I'm not saying it's on the road or wherever, or what home occupation really could be. Somebody last time said, well, about these subcategories, I think it might have been Elizabeth, I can't remember what they were, but I thought that makes sense, starting to refine and define better. And that's really what ordinances are all about. That's why that RSTR ordinance is the length that it is, so that it can stand legal challenges. And so I think, you know, I think you just need to keep rolling that way. And then, just speaking for myself, because it's a big time commitment, I've already taken on the Sturban codifier's job, which is going to consume some time. So it's going to be a real job through the fall and winter to do all of this stuff, and obviously time is a premium. So, anyway, in September, I'd encourage you, you know, come back having read the entire table of uses and the entire definitions that follow, and looking at every single thing, and start thinking about how they make sense, or how they can be expanded or further defined, and how they fit the character of Boulder, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Economic opportunity.
Yeah.
You tie the bed and breakfast back over into that.
Okay.
Yeah, so let's look at the table of uses.
How do you feel about
that? September we can maybe decide if we want to make a working group or not.
Yeah.
To nail it down.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that sounds good. Okay, so then the other, the next thing that we have is to discuss zoning, GMU and ag. I remember that.
This was based on, Carrie put it on the agenda for this week, based on the comment that I made, remember the public suggesting that we add an ag zone that's actually an ag zone.
Right.
And leave GMU 5-acre general purpose, don't call it green belt because that's confusing, general purpose multi-use. The rest of it.
Does anybody have any comments on that?
I did bring a copy of the county zoning ordinance that includes the definition of an ag zone if you want to see what they call an ag zone.
Does anybody have any... Josie, do you have any comments?
No, not at this time. I want to go into a lot more detail about it.
Me too. I feel like it's something that I almost don't want to really bring up right now because we're working on this other, and I feel like maybe it might fall in there somewhere. Maybe if we had work meetings.
When you go through the table of uses, read our definition of agriculture.
Okay. Opposed to maybe...
Ed, can you talk again about what it is that you were trying to accomplish here? I'm still not quite understanding.
There were a couple of things. First of all, GMU, which is, I think, officially called in our ordinance Greenbelt Multiple Use, is stated as a 5-acre minimum, along with low-density residential. So primarily it's a residential area, but it's also kind of been default used in Boulder as our ag, that's our ag land. GMU is our ag land. However, as we've seen developing, GMU has also become little 5-acre wheat patch, non-ranch things. And in a lot of cases, people may buy 5 acres thinking that they can get greenbelt status because it's a GMU zone, and they in fact can't because of the tax stipulation with the county. They can't build a house and have 5 acres in production. It just so it's a kind of a misnomer in terms of what people's expectations are, number one, of what they get for GMU kind of residential type. Number two, we in the general plan have stated ourselves as an ag community, and we don't have an ag zone. So to me, it just makes sense. You have a zone called agriculture, and that zone goes from 6-acre minimum up to,
And does it have residential houses on it, too?
An ag zone has a farmhouse, and it's allowed a farmhand house. And then the various, you can read that, it's a page worth of, basically an ag zone allows what you do in an agricultural zone. It allows noises and smells and farming stuff, Can you read that right there? It kind of specifies. Right
here?
Yeah.
So it's permitted use as a single family dwelling, like you said, provided that a second dwelling for a household of a hired man or seasonal labor or members of the owner's family may be allowed herein on the same lot, which conforms to the size requirements stated herein, subject to approval of the sewage disposal system and water supply system by the State Board of Health.
So that whole list of items is the important thing.
Yeah. So then it's livestock grazing, so it names it, poultry, crop production, accessory use and buildings, fur farms, livestock, feed yards, corrals, silage pits, poultry pens, dams and reservoirs, other agricultural uses.
Now that's the county's definition. I'm not suggesting and then it's not the county's, but I'm just saying, Boulder's an ag town, we don't have an ag zone.
Okay.
It's a point to make.
Yeah. And now, we start with a minimum.
Come on over to the map. And show me whose property you want to rezone into this thing where you are limited in what you can do with your property. And
I think that the people that are currently zoned the way they are, it's going to have to be
you're suggesting to undertake an effort to go through a total rezoning of the town and decide which properties are going to be in a new zone and all that, and
all you
can do is ag?
I believe that for a town that is claiming to be a ranching ag town and wants to promote that and support it and encourage that usage, we need to have a zone that's called that. And we need to encourage the kinds of open space, ranching, operations, all the stuff that is required in running a ranch in an ag zone.
Okay. You just used the word encourage. Okay, here's what it says. Greenbelt multiple use is the definition. The Greenbelt multiple use district is established, this is our ordinance, not the county's, is established to provide areas for agricultural activities and to allow other uses determined to be compatible with agricultural uses and activities.
Okay.
Okay.
And what's
the definition of agriculture? I'm not going to read it to you.
Yeah, it's a big one.
It's this long, but it's, you know, the whole time family, horses, mules, it's all, it's that right now. So we already basically have that.
Okay, so then, the only thing I'm really
you want
not wanting overlap is I want the acreage to be clear. So a low density residential area and a okay, let's just leave it like that. Low-density residential is 5 acres, minimum 5 acres. GMU, if you want to forget ag and not call it ag and just call it GMU, is a minimum 6 acres.
Okay, so
maybe that's
already our ag zone. I mean, GMU is ag. It doesn't say...
But a minimum, okay, leave it as it is, that's fine, leave it.
Change six acres.
Yeah.
We did discuss this in the general plan revision, and just to pass on that discussion, which was a working group, we did talk about increasing that to 6 acres. The concern, the feedback that we got was the cost, that's another acre at a high price right now that people would have to, you know, have in that zone. So just letting you know that was feedback. So.
Okay, now wait a minute. Shh. Take just a minute.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I think I'm done. But that was the feedback we got, so we didn't carry it forward in the general plan.
Adding an extra acre was a financial
hardship. Financial hardship, yeah.
Makes land less important.
But if you want a ranch, you can't have a ranch in 5 acres. Anyway.
Well, I think the thing about this, too, is...
That's not 100% true. That's not true.
Yeah.
I did research that.
Mark?
Well, I just want to point out that I don't think it's such a bad idea. I think you got it. Because, you know, it will cost more money, but actually in 20 years, that if you save that much, you really don't.
You know,
I would imagine how much.
That's a good point.
I was amazed how much people are paying for these 5 acres in terms of taxes.
And they just judged.
So you accomplish two things. They actually save in taxes, they'll offset that extra cost. Plus, we're encouraging people to use the property for open space and agriculture because you have to have a product.
Yeah, exactly.
And so,
so what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to roll this into our final public comments. Can I do that? So, I feel like we've discussed what we're going to, and so let's roll this into the final thing, which is final public comments. So
I'll make a motion to... Do we have to do that?
No, that's why I said then we'll go ahead. Yeah, so let's go down into this because you guys have comments, so let's let you guys make your comments and we'll just move down. Is that okay?
Yeah,
okay. So, Ray? Well, no, you're fine.
You will just be aware that I'm.
Yeah, so just try to keep remembering that. Peg's, yeah.
The point I want to make is that it's going to be GMU, you know, that's Greenbelt. It has to be at least 6 acres, which you've stated. But you also have to get that certification through the state.
Yeah.
So you can't just have 6 acres and say I'm agriculture.
Yeah.
Especially for your taxes.
Yeah.
You have to go out and get it certified as, and then you have to decrease
the value. Yeah, exactly, yes.
And I will guarantee you, because I've been through this with the county assessor, they do not make it easy. And they do not do it willy-nilly. Just because you have 6 acres, you know, they got all these statutory tests you got to meet, you got to produce this much, dedicate this much. And most people buy a 6-acre plot, you know, I don't know how many of them are going to do that. If they live here full-time and really get into it, they might be able to meet the test. They will meet resistance at the assessor's office. And then if they hang in there and prove themselves, and you can actually, I read just today, you can actually kind of pull it off on 5 acres if you do it in a certain way. Because the farmhouse is considered part of the ag part, but the tennis court is not. So if you eliminate, you know, all of that, everything is ag, and there's a house, that you do technically qualify, but like I say, it'll be a heavy lift of the assessor.
May I respond? Okay, so Yes, there's the test, and the assessor does come out, and they take pictures of, like, they have pictures of our sheep and where we have our hay, et cetera. I mean, you have to prove up, like you have to prove on water, that you're using it as a farm, or using it agriculturally, I should say. But if someone wants a residence, why, and it's in one of our GMU zones, like, and I can't think of one offhand, but maybe the Little Barrens is possibly where the little piece that was, in fact, where the guest ranch is now.
Yeah.
Was that low density residential? Was that GMU? I can't remember, but it's, I mean, it's a residential area, basically. It's not a...
Where is this?
The
AJ's house.
The AJ Martinez house.
Oh.
The guest ranch.
That was GMU.
That guest
ranch.
That guest ranch. That guest ranch.
I'm almost thinking it was low density residential.
GMU. Well, gee, anyway, it's ground. Well, there's old 1 acre lots in GMU. I mean, just because it's in GMU doesn't mean
it's
all.
It's actually LDR.
Yeah.
That's so probably what it is.
Along here.
So basically, I mean, regardless of the fact that I can't come up with a good example, if you want a residential lot,
yeah,
buy a low density residential lot. Why? I mean, I'm not sure about the argument about GMU and all you want to do is have a house and not worry about, I mean, why bother? I'm going to the general plan. We're an ag town where we say we want to be, and we need a zone that is fully and supportive of that usage. And the acreage is probably the bigger part of it because you need the acres to be any kind of a ag operation. But if you want a residence, you have a residence. And then the general purpose multi-use kind of allows you to go both ways, and depending on where it's located, it may be fitting to be have light manufacturing on it, or ag use on it, or just be a house. I mean, I think it's kind of a catch-all.
Okay, like I said, we're going through the zoning ordinances and the table of uses, so if we want to discuss that more, we can. I mean, it's like, it's just a...
Yeah, it's not what's open up right now.
Yeah, it's so... Yeah.
So it's out there on the table.
Yeah. Do we have any more public comments?
Light manufacturing is important to people because it's a great, clean way to employ people. My personal opinion is a home occupation should be differentiated. You should have both organizations. A home occupation is like Debbie. She is her own person in her own little space.
Yeah.
I used to work for a place where we sold ski goggles. And it was a big part of someone's home, but there were several sewing machines. Several of us came in to sew these ski goggles. Then the woman took and sold them. And to me, that's like manufacturing. When it's more than one person, I don't know if that's a good definition or not, but when it's a bigger business than just one person doing their thing, and it's keeping that clean, that it's got to be clean, and it's got to be functional. I think that's something we actually really want to promote here. Because it is, if you keep that clean part of it, you can employ several people. It's not going to hurt anyone. So that's just my comment about light manufacturing and home occupations. Then about RV camp, we're going to please look at that thing, even though I don't like it. It's really confusing. You've got it. On one hand, it says tent camping, and the other it says RVs, and then it never mentions campground again. It only talks about RVs. An RV park is not a tent park. It really needs cleaning up a lot.
Yeah.
You know, so I hope that you look at that, especially in both, you know, the table and what we have elsewhere, wherever else in our dimension. It's really confusing. And ag zone, I totally agree with the 6 acres and up. You could keep the GMU greenbelt and just say 6 acres and up. And then you can have your low density, it could be 5 acres, and that's great. We still want to have one house for 5 acres unless it's already pre-zoned that way, because that's what we want, right? Whether people keep it free or not, that's nothing you can really enforce. You can only help. I have greenbelt status of, I don't think I can get away with 5 acres and my house, but with the county, it's through the county, but but if you find out that maybe some great information for those people with 5 acres, I personally try to keep 10 acres because I really want to, Robert and I work together to keep that whole property farm so we can get some clients. But I like your idea of having it just, you know, compromising, you know, keep it green so you don't have to change everything. Anyway, that's it.
Thank you. Okay, so we have upcoming business for September.
Public hearing,
Yeah, so we don't have to have the public hearing. So we still want to put back on the table to discuss revisions to the zoning ordinance table of uses, right?
Refined definitions.
What'd you say?
Refined definitions.
Yeah.
You got mail.
And I don't really see anything else right now.
Oh, you shouldn't have said that.
Well, that's why, yeah. So, that's, for me, I feel like that's the one thing that everything else we've kind of done. So that's, we can start with that, and if anything else comes up during the month. But that's the only thing that I really see as far as business is rediscussing the zoning ordinance table of uses.
Yeah.
Okay. Ice cream social.
Yeah. Hmm. What kind of ice cream social? I want to talk about food. So is anybody going to, are you guys ready to, is that it? Are you ready to close? Somebody might want to make a motion that we close the meeting?
Did you make a motion?
Can I make a motion? Yeah.
I'll second the motion. All in favor?
Great. Thank you all for coming.
Sugarloaf Valley, did they get like a piece of
I got my rough delivery. It's going to take me a while to get that.
Okay. I would imagine a piece of charcoal. Yeah.
Did you
find a good place to look at definitions? He was looking at Wikipedia. I had the hardest time when I typed in definitions or table of uses. I really have a hard time. Like, make up our own? Does everybody have templates? Or?
I don't know. I haven't been able to look at it.
Me either. And in September, nothing comes up. I mean, we worked really hard the last year. So I want to have some work here.
Yeah, I'm up for that.
Yeah, okay, good. Personally, I started to realize that
was kind of. That chapter starts out.
Here's the zoning.
It is. There's the definition.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Ray. Yeah, so, okay, good. Because Perry gave me a slide.
But you do it right, we need to take our time.
I think so too. I think so too.
Yeah.
So, I want to get rid of my
I still have one of these brand new cabinets. But they'll still be kind of fussy, like, they're not very much.
Because I guess,
Yes, you have, yes, I've got, this is my master, but I have another one.
I mean, I just felt like I said.
You may use it now, though.
Exactly, not in the.
I'm pretty
So maybe we don't really, I mean, it sounded romantic and fun, but I don't think we need it.
I mean, actually, I was more interested in the chips themselves.
Well, I think that would be, yeah, but I don't think we get much, because we actually rented one from Loa 5 years ago.
Oh, yeah, no, it's like you get a giant, there's a giant pile of branches of your tiny pile of chips.
Yes.
Somebody's nice flip.
Oh.
Okay. Thank you, you again.
So, this afternoon.
Okay.
You said, oh, what's that little?
Oh,
that's the little rubber, goes up a rubber thing.
Yes,
right
on my court deal. Yeah. Thank you. Was it just on the floor?
It was on the floor, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, was the meeting, did your web veneer come in?
Got it set up, and it was a webinar-ish deal.
A meeting.
It was
a meeting.
Yeah. But it was basically looking hopeful and productive.
Well, we're going to move forward.
Yeah, we're
going
to. We're going to work with Camille. It's going to be great.
It's going to be great. But really, sincerely, it's a good idea.
This is on the right path.
Yeah.
For sure.
Okay.
Thank you guys
for everything.
Yeah, you're welcome. When does Tina get back, or did she?
Next week.
Oh, really?
Wednesday, I think.
Oh, okay.
She's gonna.
Where is she?
She's at her mom's.
Yeah, that's why she's gonna watch me.
She's fine, but she's.
Well, thanks for coming today to the deal and helping.
I think we're on a path somewhere. We'll get there someday.
We've all been on peaks the entire time.